Wow. And so the emotion that these people gave you, you know, as part of just, you know, yes, their words are important, but their voice, the emotion, the look on their face when they're telling the story.
Yes. Well, they go back and it's first person.
Yeah.
It's not, I did this, I was doing this.
Yes. Yeah, because they put themselves right back in the situation.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. What else you got for us?
Well, Clyde Leroy Todd happens to be my uncle.
Well, how about that?
Yes. And he's in Bartlesville.
Okay.
And he joined the Army, and he was sent out the 179th Coast Artillery, and he was on Diamond Head, mm-hmm. up on top of the mountain.
Right.
And he was on duty that morning, and he watched the whole attack from up on Diamond Head.
What a great perspective to be
yes.
in, not to be involved, but to observe what's going on.
And he said, I felt helpless because he couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
They had no weapons. He was just observing, observation point. But what he did, they knew the Japanese were going to invade, so they went out and set up defensive positions around the island because they knew the Japanese were going to invade.
And if there were any preparations, it was more for a land invasion as opposed
yes.
to a destructive air attack.
Yes, yeah. that's correct.
And I know that there were... You know, rumors of the, you know, well, what happens if they were to invade the mainland in California or Washington or Oregon? And while I won't say there was nothing that went along the coastline, certainly that never came to be.
That's right.
Yeah. The stories that you go to talk to these people about, in general, are these, you know, like, what, an hour interviews that you sit down and talk with them?
Well, the interview lasts as long as they want to talk.
Uh-huh.
I have some interviews as short as 15 minutes. I have one that's 6 hours long.
Wow. So just literally it varies from however they...
Yes.
Whatever they want to share, and when they feel or you feel they're done, then you thank them and move on.
Yes. And the nice thing is I get to thank them for their service and thank them for the interview.
Yeah. And then that interview is archived and people can go see what happened.
It's at the Eisenhower Library. It's cataloged to subjects. So if you're researching Pearl Harbor, they have all these interviews ready to go.
Yeah. You've got a good-sized stack, and I'm going to keep asking for more here, but where's our next stop?
Well, Lonnie Cook lives in Morris, Oklahoma. He's now 96 years old. Joined the Navy. Being from Oklahoma, he requested the Oklahoma but didn't get it. He was assigned to the Arizona.
That's the way the military assignment works.
Yes.
If you ask for Florida or California, you get Oklahoma.
Yes. And he said he went, got on, had a pass, December 5th, December 6th, the night of December 6th, went to Honolulu, partied, mm-hmm. came back to the ship. Got up and he went forward and took a shower, came back and he was in front of his locker getting dressed, and they sounded general quarters. And he said, oh no, another drill on Sunday morning. Then a few four-letter words came over the loudspeaker, and he knew it was real.
Yeah.
And he said he was heading toward his battle station in turret number 3, and the whole ship just shuddered. And he didn't know what was going on. Got in the turret, and smoke was coming in. They tried to block the ports, but they realized the smoke was coming from inside the ship. They sounded abandoned ship. He got on deck, and it was just nothing but flames.
And I know that we've seen film depictions of people jumping in the water with the oil slick on
yes.
top and that burning oil slick, but the accounts that I have seen and heard over the past couple of days, the films don't do it justice.
No. There are 6 inches of fuel oil on the water. Guys are jumping in the water trying to swim through that burning oil, and many of them were literally burned to death in
yeah.
the water.
They weren't killed by gunfire. It was the flames on top of the water.
Flames on top of the water.
Yeah, and again, I just heard it again early this morning. People, you could enlist in the Navy at the time at age 16, and probably quite a few just like, you know, get permission today to enlist early. So there could have been some 14 or 15 year
yes.
olds there.
Well, Lonnie was 19 years old.
Okay.
Yes.
That's still awfully young to be thrust in
yes.
war.
And he said he got off the Arizona and didn't get a scratch, but he said all of his friends died on the Arizona.
Boy, and what that does to you.
Oh, yeah. And he is one of 5 living survivors of the Arizona now.
And of course, CBS mentioned even top of the hour, 4 of those 5 survivors will be there. He's
yes.
the other one.
His wife just fell, and he said he can't leave his wife, so he's here, and he still lives in Morris, Oklahoma.
Okay, well, I'm sure that you're keeping in touch with him. That's neat.
Yes.
The other stories that you have to tell. Tell you what, I'm going to take a break, and we will continue with Joe Todd in just a moment, remembering the events of 75 years ago today through the eyes and ears and the stories of the people that were there. More in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Is it time to start thinking about a new car? But the thought of dealing with the large dealerships is just too intimidating, too confusing? There is an easier way. Tallgrass Motors. Tallgrass Motors doesn't play all the confusing games the large dealerships play. Tallgrass Motors has continually been voted Bartlesville's best used car dealer year after year. Go by Tallgrass Motors today and enjoy looking at over 60 used cars, trucks, and SUVs, all priced to save you money. Tallgrass Motors, Highway 75 North in Bartlesville.
And continuing our time with Joe Todd this morning, hearing the stories as they were told to Joe, survivors of the event 75 years ago today, and many of these are Oklahomans or people that live pretty close. And if I read upside down right, you got one from, is that the Stroud area or no? That's
Skytook.
Okay.
Al Wright lived in the Skytook, and he joined the Army Air Corps, assigned to the 394th Bomb Squadron at Hickam Field. And they were afraid of sabotage, and all the airplanes were lined up to prevent sabotage. And the first place the Japanese attacked were the airfields to destroy our Air Force.
Sure, because those are the ones that would come up and try to stop the attack.
Yes. And the Japanese came in, and our airplanes were sitting ducks.
Just lined up wingtip to wingtip almost.
Wingtip to wingtip.
Yeah.
And he said he just watched all of our planes destroyed, and he said, again, you feel totally helpless.
Yeah.
You can't do anything.
And I'm, you know, you hear all kinds of stories from nobody was expecting, you know, that second-rate, third-rate power of Japan to do, even get that far, let alone to do anything of that size.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And certainly it was... for most people, anyway, a surprise attack.
Yeah. Yes. Now, Garland Eslick was from Chandler.
Okay.
Joined the Navy. Being from Oklahoma, he requested the Oklahoma and got it this time.
Okay.
And he was assigned to turret number 4 in the powder handling room in the very bottom of the ship. And during the attack, he got to go into his battle station, and the Oklahoma capsized.
So now bottom became top.
Yes, and he was there, and they were splashing around with a battle lantern trying to figure out what's going on. And they realized they're upside down, and he said, I don't want my mother to cry, because I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they sat there for almost 30 hours until they were cut out December 8th. They cut 32 men out alive through the bottom of the Oklahoma December 8th.
And those were among the few survivors.
Yes, and they were above waterline.
Right.
No one below waterline got out.
Wow.
So. And he said, to keep our sanity, I bet a dollar would suffocate. Another guy bet a dollar would drown.
Gee.
And we talked about home, our families. We talked about food. We just talked about what we're going to do, what we were going to do for Christmas this year.
Well, sure, because everybody was making... You know, Christmas preparations, and if you were going to ship something home, if you bought a grass skirt, then you were going to ship it home.
Yes. And Bill McCrory's from Bartlesville was on the USS California. And she took the torpedoes, but she didn't capsize because she was tied up to the docking keys, just sunk straight down.
Yeah.
And he jumped in the water, that oil, and saw the fire coming. And he said, oh, my God, we're going to burn to death. But a captain's gig showed up and turned the fire away from the men, and that was Wesley Potts from the Oklahoma.
Wow.
He's the unsung hero because he got that captain's gig and turned the fire away from all those men in the water.
And for those that are you know, don't know the naval terminology, a captain's gig is a relatively small craft.
Yes.
And so it's just basically, you know, from the shore out to the ship if it's tied a few 100 feet off.
The gig offshore. Takes the captain to the shore and back to the ship.
And then that's the whole gig right there.
That's the whole gig.
Yes. Yeah. I want to make sure that we get as many of these stories in as I can, because these are, I mean, you've interviewed survivors of nearly every major battle in the Pacific.
Yes.
And I think you and I kind of talked about trying to on or real close to those dates, because some of them, I'm sure, will fall on weekends, but over the course of the next year or so, try to get as many of those dates remembered as we can.
Yes. But it's been my honor to interview these guys, men and women.
Right.
We also interview the women. And I thank them for their service and thank them for the interview.
Okay. Let's just get one more here, and then I think I will play about 2 or 3 minutes of FDR's speech the next day.
Well, Earl Bigelow lived in Tulsa.
Uh-huh.
And he joined the Army, assigned the 24th Division at Bellows Field.
Okay.
Another airfield.
Right.
They destroyed all the airplanes. After the battle was over, they saw something just offshore. They couldn't figure out what it was, and the Navy was dropping bombs on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he drove a tug towing airplanes, and they went out, tied a cable onto it, and it was a two-man Japanese submarine.
Yes, there were several submarines sighted offshore, and I think they sunk one or two.
Yes, they pulled that submarine ashore. One man had drowned, and they took Lieutenant Sakamaki prisoner. And he was the first prisoner of World War II, and the Navy was upset because the Army captured the two-man submarine. And he survived the war, and he became president of Toyota Automobile Company.
Yes. Talk about economic revenge. But anyway,
yes.
It was the next day when FDR made his famous address to Congress. Usually we only hear about the first minute, but I tried to excerpt some more of that because he really went into quite a bit of detail.
Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at solicitation of Japan, still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives had been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation.
Now, his address to Congress went on for quite some time, but I wanted to get at least the first 4 minutes of that. Joe, we were talking, you forget about all those other attacks, Midway, the Philippines, all those other places.
Yes.
And so many of the stories that you've interviewed these survivors, that says a lot about what went on in their mind.
Yes.
We've got a few more minutes. So do you have a couple more that we can talk about?
Well, H.C. Carmichael.
Okay.
From Tulsa, mm-hmm. and his daughter actually lives in Bartlesville, and he joined the Marines, and he was stationed at the Marine Barracks.
Okay.
And he said it was a Sunday morning, and he was waiting inside the door so he didn't have to go out and stand at attention and salute when they raised the flag.
Right.
Then he saw the airplanes fly over, and the attack started, and his battle station was in the middle of the intersection directing traffic.
But, yeah.
And so he got out there while the airplanes were strafing.
Sure.
And every time they'd come by, he'd jump in a ditch and get back on the intersection to direct traffic. And he was stood there 8 hours directing traffic after the attack. And he said he felt totally helpless. He said he had a 40
sense of someone out there with a 45. You see that in some of the films of Pearl Harbor.
One thing, they had Admiral's inspection December 8th, mm-hmm. Monday. Every ship was broken down. Every hatch was open. And every gun had been disassembled.
You're sure, because you want to spick and span for the inspection.
Yes, yes.
and that's part of it, of course.
They had two boilers going, so they're able to get the Nevada underway.
And that was a good thing, because where they were sitting, I believe they would have blocked the channel had they sunk.
Yes. They grounded at Hospital Point.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted Kirkendall in Tulsa was on the Nevada at this time. And his main job was going up on deck after the attack to identify the dead.
Wow. To identify your friends.
Yes. Yes.
You've got a couple of publications here that you brought in, and I want to at least give you credit to a couple of these. A hardbound copy of the book, The USS Oklahoma, Remembrance of a Great Lady by Joe Todd. Is that available in the library? Can people look that up?
Well, it's out of print. We did this 1990 for the USS Oklahoma Association.
Okay.
Now, there's a copy in the library here, and it's been out of print for several years, but it does show up once in a while.
So, theoretically, you could find one on eBay if you look for something like...
Yes.
But there is one in the local library.
Yes.
People can go look at your work. And then a southbound, spiral-bound copy. I have seen this once or twice around. This was a transcription of a lot of your interviews.
Yes, those are the Pearl Harbor survivors that I've interviewed.
And I know there's some photos of these guys, some of them probably photos that they had sent back to mom and dad.
Yes.
Because everybody gets that photo as you graduate from basic training, your first liberty. One of the places you always seem to hit is that Photoshop.
Yes. The downside of this project, I've interviewed 1,300 and probably less than 200 are still living.
Yeah.
The rest of them are gone.
And I know we were talking primarily some area people, but there were probably some that live well outside the area that just are very memorable interviews for you, that you were just so glad you made that trip.
Yes. Well, I went down to San Antonio to the Bataan Death March reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Did 12 interviews from survivors of the Bataan Death March. I've been to 6 USSO Oklahoma reunions around the country. And I've interviewed about 90 to 100 crew members from the Oklahoma.
Well, the CBS News, I think, was talking about the group of 5 survivors four of 5 are getting ready together today, and the comment was made that would probably be their last reunion.
Yes. The Pearl Harbor survivor as a group have disbanded.
Okay.
They said they're losing so many members they have officially disbanded.
Well, it's a group that we owe a great debt to.
Yes, we do.
And I'm sure there'll be all kinds of video footage from a lot of these, but thank you so much for talking to these vets and preserving them, Joe.
Now, the newspaper did this.
Okay.
That's available at the newspaper.
And that's In Honor of Heroes, Stories of Courage and Valor, World War II by Joe Todd. And this is available locally still?
Yes, the Examiner Enterprise has this book.
Okay. So contact the folks at the EE if you'd like to copy of that one. Joe, thank you so much for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll get together periodically here and talk more veterans issues.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
The Overcomers on the way next from Voice of the Martyrs, brought to you by Brian Little, Haley and Kent, CPA.
Hi, I'm Todd Nettleton, and this is the Voice of the Martyrs Radio. Stop preaching to Muslims was